Hey, Derek.
Hey, Mike. Wait, you're still Mike, right?
Do we still remember how to do this?
Did we ever know?
You know what might be the easiest way to remember how to do this?
No.
Get a world-class guest who actually can carry a podcast, and then you just sit back and ask a couple of questions.
Here's a question. Share your wisdom.
Yes.
I'll be over here.
Folks, it is welcome back to season seven. Is this season seven, Derek?
I've lost track now.
Welcome back to season seven.
George Lucas wrote all of these seasons at the same time. He just released the three he thought would be the best first.
Yeah.
And then went from there.
Well, I'd like to say welcome back to season seven of the reigning, defending, podcast champions of Raleigh. Folks, welcome back to Cheaters Never Win. Season 7, Mike and Derek here. John Forslund took 59 minutes out of his summer vacation to talk to us just a few minutes ago. We'd like to tell you which part to fast forward to, but the whole damn thing is brilliant because John Forslund is the best.
So here's the thing. If you listen to this podcast despite what Mike and I have to say, you're going to love this episode because I think of those 59 minutes, you will hear one of our voices for maybe 2.5 of those minutes.
Hopefully less. Yeah. I may try to go back in and edit it and speed our voices up so folks can hear John more. John Forslund joined us on the Don from Fathom Realty guest line. Yes, Don sticking around for another year as a sponsor. And congratulations to Don, the at Caniac underscore realtor.
Respect the underscore.
Who actually sold a house to a podcast listener this summer. So there is a very good chance if this person chooses to do so, they might be able to cash in on the Section 328 sponsor trifecta. We just have to confirm the rest of this year's sponsors first.
Yes.
So that's to be determined. Derek.
I've got Buick on line three. Should we take Buick?
I think that's infringing on Jeff Merrick's gimmick. So, the only thing we can do.
What's that?
We can infringe upon his old gimmick and hit that damn X button.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this season seven of Cheaters Never Win, the longest running, nearly successful podcast in Carolina Hurricanes fandom history. My name's Mike.
I'm still Derek.
And we're still brought to you as a proud member of the now daily Sports Channel 8 radio show and their burgeoning podcast network. Although I don't know if they're going to have a Hornets podcast after today's local broadcast because, man, the Hornets shade thrown on the first episode of Sports Channel 8, the weekday radio show, was fierce.
I listened to the first hour or so of the show. I didn't get to hear the Hornets shade.
Yeah, I think I was listening to the second hour of the show, and there was I believe they asked if the Hornets could be moved to France.
Oh, God. I think the Gastonia Hornets may be better.
Yeah.
Their roster's not going to be good.
It's not going to be good at all. Derek, we could say a bunch of stuff and do all of this, but the folks basically listen to this for one reason this week. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's go to the Don from Fathom Realty guest
line. This is Don Meyer with Fathom Realty, official realtor of Section 328. You can find me at becauseitshome.com. I am as passionate about helping you make your next move as I am about the Carolina Hurricanes. On average, homes sold by my firm sell 78 days quicker than other homes on the MLS, getting money in your pocket sooner. Buyers also get exclusive strategic representation in the seller's market. Contact me at becauseitshome.com to learn more.
And Derek, it's been a while since we've been behind the mics, but it is a summertime tradition. Every summer, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, none better, the man, the myth, the legend, John Forslund, takes some time out of his New England I assume they put him in a cryogenic chamber next to Antonio Brown and just have to refuel him because after that playoff run, I've been spent. Mr. Forslund, thank you for joining us. How, please tell us and the fans who just after such an emotionally draining playoff run, how do you recoup from that?
Well, first of all, Mike and Derek, good to hear your voices, and good to be back with you again. This has become an annual rite, which I love doing and getting up with you guys. But to answer your question, it's easy. I don't know. I kind of figured out along the way that you need to have, in this business, two different lives. You need to have your professional life, and if you're going to have any kind of personal life, it's important to reconnect, and I mean in a big way, almost 24/7 with your family. And my job, the way it's set up and contoured, it's easy for me in the summer because I'm basically a retired person every off season, which I'm very grateful for. So I get a lot of time to reconnect with my family. When the kids were smaller, it was vital. And as they get older now, and they're moving into their own worlds, their own drives of their own, and their own ambitions, it's even more important for me to be available to them. So we kind of live that way. It's harder based on my national schedule than it's ever been, but it's all good. So no complaints here. I'm just recharging, and I can't wait for the next season.
Well, same here, John. And let's go back to the playoff run a little bit if we can. Obviously, it was a lot of fun for the fans, and you've been able to see a lot of playoff games even when the Canes weren't in the postseason thanks to the national schedule that you're on. But what was it like for you from up high at the PNC Arena to see that energy in that building again and what it meant for the fans, the team, and everybody who has their hands on this in any way to feel that energy again that we so sorely needed?
Well, with all due respect to the 06 Stanley Cup season, and I've told a lot of people this over the course of the summer, the 18-19 season might be the most rewarding I've ever been part of. In my career, and this goes back to the days of the American Hockey League from 84 to 91, I was part of two Calder Cup championships, my last two seasons in the AHL. And those years were special. And just like anything I've experienced at the highest level, in terms of a connection with players and watching players come together with that chemistry needed to be winners at the end of it all. This group had all of that dynamic in place. And this group was as special and as unique as they've ever been. And so for me, it was one of the most rewarding seasons. I think last year when we convened here and we talked about what was next, we talked with a little bit of excitement, a little bit of reservation about where this was going, where it was headed. We talked with a lot of anticipation about what Rod Brind'Amour could accomplish in his first season as coach. And I think I told you I truly believed that he could be the guy to get this thing done and get it pointed back in the right direction. But no one saw this coming. And certainly at the first of the year, no one could ever have dreamed that the season would get to the level that it got to. And so when it was over, I look back at it and I look at not only what the boys did on the ice, but I look at what happened in the seats and I look at how the market became relevant in terms of hockey again, how the business was revitalized, how many tickets were sold, how much excitement there is for this coming season. So that's why for me, sure, the Stanley Cup stands by itself. It's a championship season. Those years are unbelievable, once in a lifetime things. But then when you miss out for, you know, the 10-year period before you get back to anything close, and you saw what happened and you saw it all come back again, that to me was very rewarding because it just speaks to the strength of the fan base, the real people who care about the team, the real people like yourselves who've been there through thick and thin, shared in the frustration, share in the elation, but most importantly, that we kept the fire burning enough so that it could get to a point where it was reignited again. So to me, that's why this was a very rewarding, if not the most rewarding season for me to be part of, to watch and try to articulate to the fan base and just take it through from start to finish, because this was a year that was going okay at the beginning and then hit a real roadblock and looked like SOS again. And then the team was fixed halfway through and got to a level that we hadn't seen in a long time. And so it was just a very, very special season. There's no question.
Well, you mentioned a couple things there, John, and it's great to hear that. You mentioned particularly how this time last year we're talking about Rod Brind'Amour and what he could do. And now that maybe we look back upon everything that happened last season, maybe maybe Rod Brind'Amour is that ember that has been slowly burning for the last 9 years or so to kind of keep this team and everything kind of caught fire last year. So you probably know Rod Brind'Amour both as a player and as a coach better than just about anybody inside this organization. What about Rod maybe surprised you most last year, knowing that the high expectations we all had of him as both a person and a player going in, but what was the biggest surprise you saw out of Coach Brind'Amour last year?
I wasn't surprised by too much. You know, he had called me last summer and I was taken back, first of all, that he would call and ask a question of me, but he did. He said, you know, from your side, do you have any advice for me? And I told him, I said, just never change. If I see you change and not be the same guy, I hope you won't get offended, but I'm going to tell you. And he said, please, please, please do. As a friend, would you please do that? I never had to. I never even thought about it. I mean, I never saw Roddy change at all. It's the same guy. We all get older. We all mature in different ways. We all go through different stages of life. He's done all of that. And I've watched him, you know, come to us as a, you know, established player with Philadelphia, come to a place that he wasn't sure about at the beginning. He said that. And then watch him kind of, you know, take off with the team and then take it to a new level when he finally became captain after the canceled season and then lead the team to the Stanley Cup and beyond. But then when he got into retirement and became an assistant coach, you know, I watched his work ethic. I watched what he was bringing to the table. I was very impressed with it. I was very impressed with how of a grassroots approach he had to coaching. Well, he really wanted to get involved, not just as a great player who's trying this as a side dish or a hobby, or maybe I'll just put my feet in the water here and see how it works. No, no, he dug right in to become a career coach. And I think he's destined for this. I think he's going to be an outstanding coach. He's already proven that in 1 year. It'll go further with this team. There's no question. There'll come a time where he's going to probably move on to something else. That's the way the nature of the coaching business is. I'm pretty convinced he'd go somewhere else and coach and do a great job, because I think he gets it. He gets, you know, the intricacies of coaching today's athletes. So I never saw him, you know, waver one bit in terms of his mindset, his stubbornness. I've used that word a lot to describe him. I thought he was as stubborn as you could get as a player. He was stubborn in terms of his game preparation, stubborn on the ice, the way he played, stubborn in terms of his off-ice preparation. He carried all of that to the coach's office. And when the times were rough, and there were people pushing at him to change this and change that and adjust line combinations and move guys around, he didn't do it. And he was stubborn. And because he was so stubborn and the players had such a high level of respect for him, he was able to turn the ship around, get it pointed back in the right direction, and take the team to where it ended up. And I just think that, you know, I told you guys this, he's real. He cares. Those are two words or phrases that we throw around a lot. But for me, I don't like to do that unless it is real and it is with him. And I just think no matter what happens, you know, he's gonna give you full value as a fan. He's going to give you full value in terms of how his team is prepared to play, how they want to execute once the game starts, and what they do when the game ends, you know, in terms of whether they have to build on what just happened if it was positive, or fix something negative.
Well, I'll tell you, with that authenticity in all of the post-game speeches that Kane's Vision was sharing from Brind'Amour in the locker rooms, he certainly gave them a run for their money as far as keeping up with him with his frantic pacing down there. That was certainly something. But when you talk about coaches, the biggest change that we've had this offseason with coaches is in the goaltending coach. And the new guy is a former Whaler, and curious if you ever crossed paths with him in Hartford, if you have any experience with him, and is he that guy who can take us, you know, last year between a goalie coach and two new netminders, we went from not having great goaltending numbers to being in the league average category. Yeah. Is this a guy who can take us a little bit higher than that?
Well, you would hope so. And to be honest with you, I can't really answer whether I know, because I've lost track of Jason Mazzotti over the years. But I do remember Jason because he played for us in Hartford. He was a backup to Sean Burke. He was a great teammate. He was a student of the game, outstanding individual, and one of the best goalie fighters you're ever going to come across.
Yes.
And so you can Google this and pull up the YouTube for the last game ever played at the Odd in Buffalo. It was a Sunday afternoon, and it was obviously the Whalers and the Sabres. And there was a brawl, and Mazzotti was in the middle of it all, and it was a classic. But I used to call him the Fighting Scorpion. That was his nickname that I gave him, myself and Daryl Ray. Razor probably, you know, went to it first, and I just, you know, piggybacked off it. But we started to refer to him as the Fighting Scorpion because of his style. He was an athletic goalie, didn't have a lot of technique. You know, his era kind of predates the technical aspect of goaltending that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years. But he was, he attacked the puck, he attacked his angles. He was fun to watch. Now, I know his background. I know after his time with the Whalers, what he went on to do. I know how great he was for the Italian Olympic team back in the day at the end of his professional career in Europe. And most recently, obviously, a goalie coach with Michigan State. I know this, too. He's a best friend of Rod Brind'Amour. So I think Tom Dundon allowed Rod to make the call. I think they probably went down a couple of roads, looked at a lot of different people. That's why it took so long. But I think at the end of it, I think Tom wanted Rod to be comfortable. And this should fit like a glove for the head coach. And the rest we'll see. You know, because, again, Mike Bales was kind of a mixed bag. No one really knew until this past season how important he was, because it was Rod who gave him the ability to make all the calls in terms of who started. And under Bill Peters, I'm not sure Bales had that authority. It was obviously a consultation with his goalie coach, but I think Bill made the decisions. Rod really didn't want anything to do with it from day one, but Mike orchestrated it. He did to a T. I don't remember a season where you could look back and really second guess any decision based on whether Mrazek or McElhinney played. It seemed like it was all for the right reasons and it always worked. And that's a tough act to follow. But Jason's a hardworking guy and we'll just have to see where it goes.
And the fact that Rod Brind'Amour recognizes that goaltending is voodoo and he wants nothing to do with it
might
be the smartest thing I've ever heard someone say about Rod Brind'Amour. So, John, we're going to get to next season and kind of the summer and forward-looking here in a second, but you've always been great with this type of thing, so I have to ask this question. Is there one story about the playoffs that the fans don't know yet or maybe haven't heard that it kind of encapsulates this amazing run that was, you know, punctuated by so many things? The Svechnikov-Ovechkin fight, Jordan Martinook becoming, you know, to, I think, allowing the fans to see just how important a part of this team that he was, Justin Williams' leadership. Is there a story out there that the fans may not have heard about about last year's team that is going to make us want to go and watch this year's team even more?
You know, I don't think it was just something that centers around the playoffs. I think this team's chemistry was evident from the first day of training camp. It builds as the season goes along. And then, again, I said it halfway through the year, I would get more requests for interviews as we got into January and February. The team was having more success. And I would say to whoever was asking questions about this group, the chemistry is second to none. The chemistry is akin to what I saw in 06. I would always qualify and say, I'm not saying that this team will win the Stanley Cup, but I am saying that they're as tight as I've ever seen. And then they almost did. So I think the hijinks that goes on away from the game it's so important. At times you can look at it and say, boy, it's childish maneuvers by grown men. But when you're with the same people 24/7, you travel like the team does. If you're a voyeur as I am and you kind of watch what they do, sometimes you are privy to some things that are pretty neat. And I'll give you a story. We're in Tampa, off day, and after I do my afternoon work, we flew in the morning. It's the beginning of my prep for the game the next day. I went out for a walk and it was real hot. And of course, I never bring enough clothes, you know, for the warm climates when you go to Tampa. So you're basically out with, you know, jeans on and a shirt. You're sweating profusely. But I'm out for a walk, just trying to get some air. And I hear bells ringing. So where we were staying, you know, you could rent bikes. You get down to the shore. And here come these bicycles behind me, and they're ringing bells, you know, so they're not going to bump into me. And I turn around quickly, and it's Doug Bennett, trainer, right? He was the first guy. And then next in line is Dougie Hamilton, sitting up like a stork, you know, on this bicycle, straight up in the air, ringing the bell, big grin ear to ear, and Andrei Svechnikov, like right behind. And these are the things these guys would do, you know, to have fun on an off day instead of, you know, sleeping all day, which, you know, they're entitled to, or just going to a local establishment, sitting down and, you know, having a couple and relaxing as teammates. You know, you can do that too. They would do things like this that, you know, etch a impression in your memory of, wow, this team is different because, A, they're not afraid to go out and do something like this, and you should have seen Svechnikov. I don't know if he's ever been – obviously, he's ridden a bicycle before, but not under these circumstances. And the bikes were not the type of bicycles that you would be – for me, I'd be pretty embarrassed to be on a bike that looked like this, okay, if you get my drift. So they might as well have the old streamers hanging off the handlebars. These things were not, you know, appealing by any stretch of the imagination, but they were rental bikes with big tires, kind of goofy looking. But I mean, these are the things that went on, and they extended through the playoffs with the, you know, going out for ice cream and some of the stuff they throw up on Instagram and the social media things that Martinuk was responsible for. It's all real. And this is a team from every player through the staff, extended on to their moms and dads who were with us a lot throughout the playoffs. Certainly the dads had an epic dad's trip this year. And you can see why this team was so tight, because their fathers, I've never seen a group of guys have as much fun as this group did. So it was a storybook. It really was. And I think it's important for the fans to understand that, because the fans were an extension of this. You know, everybody, the entire Kaniac Nation jumped on with this philosophy of having a great time and becoming a jerk. And that's basically what went on here. And I wish we could relive it. It's going to be really hard to duplicate it, but they're going to try to.
I completely agree. I love that story and how this team just embraced their goofiness. And I think that was a wonderful thing. And one name that we've talked about and you've brought up a couple of times as far as the leadership on this team is Justin Williams. And obviously, still an unknown now. So, John, if you were a betting man, is Justin Williams going to be back next season? And do you have any news that you could share with us?
Yeah, I don't have any news.
I try.
And good try, but I you know what? I don't know. And I'm a little concerned because we're closing in on August 16th. I don't know, you know, why it's taking so long. I have my own opinions on it. I'm just speculating like everybody else. I think for me, if it takes this long, then it's either it probably is the hardest decision he's ever had to make. And maybe this is why, but it could be a little bit contractual. It could be that, you know, the seats at the table have been taken and they're trying to figure out a way to make this work. I would have thought that at the beginning of the off season, you know, a duplicate contract, at least a 1-year deal coming off what he did, was something that they might have thrown at him and then asked him to make the decision. Maybe that happened behind closed doors, but I'm not aware of that. So I don't know. I think right now it's a little bit concerning. You know, as we talk about it, maybe tomorrow it gets fixed and maybe he's back. Hearing Dundon talk about it, hearing Waddell talk about it, they seem to be leaning towards the fact that he will play again. I know Rod has, you know, said a couple of weeks ago he was expecting to hear pretty soon. It's taken to this point. We still haven't heard anything. So I don't know. I just think that, you know, family is such a big part of this decision. I'm sure his kids want him to play again. And I can't speak for him. You know, I don't know, you know, where he is with this. I do know that in order to play again at his age, there's an an awful lot he needs to do in the off season to prepare. You don't just say on, you know, August 20th, I think I'll play, and then start his preparation. So he has to be keeping himself in the best shape possible, because as they get older, they have to do more just to get to play. And I remember when Matt Sundin retired, you know, he said he wasn't retiring from playing the games. He was retiring from preparing to play the games, because it was too difficult to prepare to play. The playing was easy. So I don't know where Willie is with all that. And I'm like everybody else here and around the hockey world. We think the world of him and understand that he deserves this opportunity to take as long as he wants, if it's the night before training camp. But who knows? I expect pretty soon that we're going to know one way or the other. And the team has already said that it's a slam dunk that he's either going to play or not, and it'll be for this team. Mm-hmm. Because I heard some things a few weeks ago that he might be, you know, he might not only be looking with the Hurricanes, it might be with another team. But I think that was pretty much outside speculation. I haven't heard much on that.
Well, we all certainly hope he comes back, and whether it's this season or, you know, hopefully a couple years down the road, the Hurricanes will have a new captain. Is there a player who's on this roster today that jumps out at you, whether that what's their status as a player and the quality of their play or the quality of their personality and how they mesh with the team, that jumps at you and says, this is the next guy to put the C on his sweater?
Well, Jacob Slavin has everything needed to do this and would be a guy that I think would be suited for it, and they couldn't go wrong to go down his road with this someday if that were the case. But for me, it would be Sebastian Aho. I see him as a captain. I see him continuing to get better and better. And when I say that, I'm not only speaking from a statistical standpoint. I'm talking about better and better as an all-around player. And I see him like Saku Koivu was back in the day. So for me, that's the captain. I see Sebastian Aho as the future captain of the Hurricanes. I just think that he would bring a lot of that dimension to the table as one of your best players, if not the best player. The student of the game, does everything correctly. Unbelievable young man. But they've got some great choices. It would be either he or Slavin for me, but I would lean towards Sebastian.
Yeah, we are definitely all aboard the Aho train here at the Section 328 Worldwide headquarters. And, you know, there was it made for Aho was just a piece of a very interesting offseason, John, where, you know, we've kind of seen the new business norm with, you know, we've heard it said that Tom Dundon continues to shake up the 200 hockey men in Canada. And you had a chance to experience that as part of your renegotiation this summer. So, you know, what is, I'd love to get someone who's kind of on the inside, what's your view of kind of the new business norm at 1400 Edwards Mills Road regarding contracts and at will work, and, you know, Don Waddell interviewing with the Minnesota Wild at one point this offseason. And if you can't comment, we understand, but kind of what's your view of kind of this new business norm that Tom Dundon has instituted with the Carolina Hurricanes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, to be frank with you, I don't understand at will. I really don't. I don't see, that's my opinion of it. I don't see where that makes any sense for either side. I think in certain jobs, contracted personnel is important, because you want to put a value on that individual, and you want to make sure that you retain that individual, and you want to make sure that that individual is you know, going to perform, you know, the way you should, and without the opportunity to look elsewhere, even want to have that creep into your mindset. From an employer standpoint, I think you want all of that. From an employee standpoint, you want commitment. You want to know that you're not going to be looked at on almost a daily basis. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know much about working at will, because I never had to in my career. So based on the fact that I'm on the air, it's also a legality situation where you want to have people that are on air in the media under contract, just in case something crazy happens. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that's important. And in terms of coaches and general managers and scouts and your hockey personnel, you just don't want to be poached by another organization. So I think there's a level of protection on both sides. Now, with Tom Dundon, you know, I think, and I've said this over and over again, since he's bought the team, you have to understand that he's a maverick. You have to understand that he's unconventional. You have to understand he's going to come in and say why to just about everything. And that's good, because if you do something for a long period of time one way, people develop habits, people get comfortable, people need to have their trees shaken every once in a while. So I see that as a good thing, and I've always felt that way about what Tom's attempting to accomplish here. And when you look at Tom's career and how he's gotten to this point, you can't second guess anything he's done in his own life in terms of business and how smart he is and the decisions he's made to acquire the wealth he has. And then when you look at the situation with the Hurricanes, you can't knock the success of the team either. You can't knock anything that's happened to this point, because everything has been good. So what do you do? What you have to do, and this is what I try to do in my own personal situation, is understand who you're dealing with. You have to understand that no matter what you do. The old phrase, and I don't mean it as anybody that's your employer is your enemy, but you, if you're competing or you're dealing with someone, negotiating, you have to know the enemy. And if you don't, you're dealing with your own set of rules too, which can work adversely against you. So you have to understand where he's coming from. And so in my situation, you know, it's public that it's a one-year deal. Would I have liked it to have been longer? Yes. We kind of talked about a variety of different things. It's a little complicated because of where I'm at in my career with NBC and all these different things. But I knew my agent met with Don during the Eastern Conference Final, and I knew that salary-wise, this wasn't going to go much further. I was good with that. But for me, I wanted a little bit more security than I have right now. But I think there's a lot of things here. There's a little bit of an understanding between myself and the team that we'll take it for this year and see where it goes. There's some things happening with the league. We don't know where the CBA is going to align a year after this next season. We don't know if we'll be in a lockout or not. There's a lot of things that have to get worked out. So maybe in the next few months we can look at the future again. At least that's my hope. Because, and I've told you guys this, yes, national work is great. Yes, I'm flattered by the amount that I get and what people say. But as I said, when this contract was announced, you know, my heart has always been with the Hurricanes. So I really don't want to go anywhere, and I want to continue to do this. So, but I had to recognize in my own world, this is the best deal that we can make for now, and I'm happy with it, and we move forward. And the fact that I'm coming back for another season to do what I love to do for this team is an honor, a privilege, and I thank Tom for it. In Aho's case, I think they were smart in their own world, because I think Sebastian wanted to get to a deal. And I think it's fair to say that it wasn't easy to get to that point in and around July 1. It looked like this would probably be protracted out over the course of the summer. It's probably something Sebastian did not want to do, and from some of his comments now you can see that that was the case. So what do you do? The only way to expedite what could be a roadblock and maybe a messy situation, because a lot of these contracts are tied together. You're seeing this with Marner and Point and Rantanen and some of these other McAvoy, these high-profile RFAs that have yet to get deals. You know, you could get lumped in with that group, and we could still be looking at a situation tonight without Sebastian Aho if they didn't get to the offer sheet. So offer sheets are dangerous, they're risky, and the player and the agent have a lot to do with it. And that's one thing that I think was kind of misportrayed in the media a little bit, was the fact that the Montreal Canadiens are this heinous organization who swooped in and are trying to, you know, become public enemy number one here and steal Sebastian Aho. They actually did Sebastian a favor. They actually did all of us as fans of the Hurricanes a favor by putting out an offer sheet that was easily matched by Tom after he's accepted the fact that he's going to roll out about $22 million in the first calendar year in a signing bonus, which is probably something he didn't want to do in a standard negotiation with Jerry Johansson and Aho, but had to do it. And then in Aho's case, I'll sign it. Worst case scenario, I go to play to Montreal. Do I want to play for Montreal? No, but it's the only way we're going to get a deal done. So I'm going to take a chance. And because he did, he was able to get a fair deal. And it's fair for him in terms of the AAV. It's fair in terms of the years. It's player-friendly. It's not team-friendly. I'm sure the team would have liked a 7-8-year deal, 8-year max if they could have got to that with their own player. But it wasn't going to be. So now it's a 5-year deal. He's a UFA at 26. That's a little bit dangerous, but I'm sure this is going to work out famously for both sides. And I think when this is over with, you know, they'll be extending him at some point, and they'll play it all out. But Tom has utilized, and Don, they've utilized the system with every single circumstance. And sometimes it's not what people want to hear, but that's where we're at right now. And even in Waddell's situation, it's similar. So it's different. You have to accept it. I think there is a portion of the fan base that loves it, that loves an unconventional owner like this, because they see the results, which have been in the short term very good. I think you have to take a bigger look at everything before you can cast final judgment and see where it all goes. But these are the rules, and this is the managerial approach the Hurricanes are operating under right now. And away you go. And so, again, it kind of fits the identity of last year's team as kind of the renegade bunch of jerks who no one's really given a chance to, but the results are spot on. And so far, the results have been spot on.
Yep, they've been really good, and appreciate your candor answering that question as well. So let's turn the page now to the coming season. In addition to re-signing Aho to that 5-year deal, the Canes made some other moves, acquired a fellow Finn and Eric Halla, and signed Ryan Dezingle. And those two guys bring additional speed to this lineup. Of those guys, or maybe one of the guys who was on the team last year who may step up their visibility or their role with the team, who do you see having a really big impact next year for the Canes?
Well, I think the easy answer for that is Svechnikov. And I think Svechnikov will lock in as a top six forward. I've said it over and over again last season. I thought he was handled perfectly, even though, again, during the dark days of November and certainly the horrible times in December, you know, people were saying, how come Svechnikov can't play with Teravainen and Aho? Rod was stubborn about that. He didn't feel he was ready for it. And so I hope everybody watched that. I hope everybody watched how to handle an 18-year-old player in the National Hockey League. I think the Hurricanes did a marvelous job with this guy. Insulated him off the ice with key veteran guys who were very strong influence. Guys like Jordan Martinook and the rest of them, Williams and Stahl, all of them had an effect on Andre. And then they allowed him to grow as a player. Curtail all those penalties he was taking, most of them out of frustration, most of them being caught out of defensive position, you know, reaching penalties, grabbing penalties. Usually, you know, guys are hooking and holding. They're out of position. That's why. And so that had to be fixed. Rod, on numerous occasions, shared with me the fact that, you know, Andre dominated in the USHL, dominated in the OHL. And when you're that big and strong at that age and you dominate your peer group, you don't have to worry about the other aspect of the game, the defensive aspect of the game, when you get up to this level. But when you get up to this level, he had to be taught. He had to be taught by the coaches. He had to be self-taught many times in terms of how he needed to become better so that he wasn't going to hurt the team when he was on the ice. He could help the team, but he couldn't hurt the team. And then we were able to see at the end of the season, you know, it all come together and see these flashes of brilliance in the playoffs, which give you a little glimmer, a little look, a peek at what this could be like moving forward. So I think he's an easy answer in terms of, okay, that's a step up into the next season, and that'll be better for him. Scored 20, all even strength in his rookie year. So you plug him in for 20, and he probably is going to score more, I would think. But that's going to be great to watch. But now when you add Eric Halla and Ryan Dezingle in a full season of Nino Niederreiter, we're not exactly in the same spot we were last year, were we, in terms of where the goal's going to come from?
Nope.
How are they going to recover from the Skinner trade? You know, how's this going to all work? They were able to manufacture a pretty good year. You know, goal scoring wise, was okay. Wasn't god awful. But then when Niederreiter joined the team in January, went to another level. And you look at Aho, 83 points. You look at the numbers they had. You know, the amount of assists Teravainen had. And these are sensational numbers in today's game. So you add these two players to the mix. They're in a great spot, and they're both perfect for the style of play, perfect, prototypical Hurricanes. I think it's going to work out just great. And the trick will be, you know, keeping everybody happy, finding the right slots for guys. If Williams comes back, it complicates things a little bit, in a good way, though. But Dzingel will want to be a top six guy. I'm not sure that he is, but he'll want to be. Haula will want to be the two center. I'm not sure that he is. He'll probably slot as a three. These are all good problems to have. In Haula's case, he's going to be a great penalty killer. He's going to finish checks. He competes like you wouldn't believe. He's good in the faceoff circle. There are a lot of different intangibles that he'll bring along with his speed and his scoring touch. And Dzingel is a shooter. He guns and he fires at will. He asks questions later. His biggest trick will be to become like Teravainen, better in traffic areas, better in tighter games, not fade into the woodwork as he did in the playoffs with Ottawa a couple of years ago, and really fell out of disfavor with Columbus. That could be a lot on Tortorella. That could be a lot on Dzingel. I wasn't there. I wasn't the first round, and I'm just an outsider, so I don't really know. But when he comes now at this age, gets a contract he did from the Hurricanes, you know, Ryan Dzingel's in a position to take the next step. So from a goal-scoring standpoint, I think they set up great. I don't think there's going to be much issue there, and I think they're going to be a force in terms of the offensive side of the game.
Well, John, we look at what happened in last year's training camp, and it's seemingly out of nowhere. Lucas Wallmark makes this team, and then Jordan Staal goes down middle of the season, and not only does Lucas Wallmark step up, but he steps up and delivers probably more scoring touch, more grit, and more minutes than we had ever anticipated a successful team having when we kicked off the season in October. Do you see a guy who's going to rise up off that Calder Cup champion team in Charlotte to potentially fill that next generation first-year player like Lucas Wallmark did last year?
Well, you hope that Marty Natchez is ready. I love this player. I thought, like all of us, that, you know, last season he would be more of the more of the attack, more of the pitcher than he was. So, you know, by going down, playing a little bit on the wing, going through the Calder Cup season, I'm not going to say it's a slam dunk. Some people say it's a slam dunk that Natchez is on the team. Natchez is, you know, going to do great things. He's still a young player. You have to have a level of reservation with all these situations. So that would be one guy that I think has the ability, if he is spot on, to join the team and make an impact at the NHL level just because of his skill set. His skill set is elite. It's just maturation. That's all that's involved here. And hopefully, you know, the full season in the American Hockey League would have done that, and playoffs, because that playoff experience is vital, and you can't, that's second to none. You just can't duplicate that. So that always helps a player. In terms of other guys, you know, I think when I look at the defense, Fleury has to be ready to contribute. And so he wasn't really a checker last year, or was he? I mean, I'm not 100% sure. You know, had a play in the playoffs, but as you saw, it was limited. And there were games in the playoffs where, you know, he's under 5 minutes. They couldn't put him in that spot. He did rejoin Charlotte. He did make a great contribution in the championship. And so now he comes back and he's got to perform. He's got to perform in the 5-6 role, which will be interesting because, you know, the injury to Van Riemsdyk, that's kind of a gray area right now in terms of how that's going to play out. Is Jake Bean ready? I don't know. I mean, great year in the American League, all rookie team, phenomenal amount of assists. You know, that's all good. Does it translate? Does he take the next step? Maybe. But again, it's whoever is in the mix needs to be able to play. And so I think in Fleury and Bean's case, they can both make the team. They can both be, you know, hybrid guys, 6-7s in and out of the lineup. But one of the two is going to have to be there. And then there's, you know, there's other stories that are interesting. And the Sellgren kid's an interesting story. Hopefully he turns some heads. Forsling, you know, he's had his stay in the National Hockey League with Chicago, which has been kind of a mixed bag. But he's a good player. He's a good player with the puck. but they're all kind of the same. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in training camp. In terms of the rest of the forward group, you know, Morgan Geekie, another step. Clark Bishop showed last year he can make a contribution as a fourth line guy at this level. Julian Gauthier, I'm not 100% sure that Julian Gauthier will make the grade. It could be a bust. It could be a great story. It's kind of a you know, this is it. It's time to prove, you know, what you have there. So there's a lot of different guys that were a big part of what they did. Yanni Kuokkanen's kind of a forgotten name, and I don't know why, because in the last two seasons he's been knocking on the door of an NHL job and then kind of fell out of favor. So isn't it great that there are a lot of options? Like, there's a lot of names to talk about, but pretty much the NHL roster is a set deal. So we're only talking about two or three spots, the number two goaltender position, and the, you know, a spot on defense and maybe a forward spot.
It's such a refreshing problem to have compared to, say, 2011, when we would have to pencil in a guy from Charlotte into the second left wing.
Correct.
You've been
rookie.
That too, yeah. You have been so generous with your time, and we've talked about a lot of, you know, some heavier topics, some more analysis sort of things, but we'd like to get to some of the lighter questions that are some from us, good, some from the KNX that we've gotten on Twitter. And one that I would like to start with is about theme nights. You know, we've seen the Hurricanes do some theme nights from very socially impactful, like You Can Play Night, to Nostalgia with the Whalers Night, and to whimsical like Star Wars Night. If John Forslund could pick a theme night for the Carolina Hurricanes to have, what theme night would you pick?
Oh boy. Wow. I don't know. That's interesting. I'm not really into this stuff as much as a lot of people are. I'd love to see us go back to some of the old Hurricane uniforms, with the, you know, racing flag and the, you know, the whole, all that trim. I think enough time has passed, and I think it would be kind of neat to look at, one more time. As far as the Whaler Night thing, that grew on me big time. I wasn't a fan of it going into it. I had a lot of mixed emotion attached to it. I thought it was a marketing grab and I was going to leave it at that. But then when I saw the uniforms and had an opportunity to visit with, you know, Mike Rogers, who came back and got in the locker room and got to see the uniforms hanging there, you know, 4 or 5 hours before game time. And then when the game started, I was like, and heard the song, I was so into it. It took me by surprise. So these things kind of grow on me. So, I'm open to suggestions. I'm not stuck in the mud somewhere. You know, I'm not a hardcore traditionalist that doesn't like a lot of new things. So I like it. I think with regard to this franchise, you know, kind of rolling back the clock might be an interesting thing to do. Maybe a thematic with, you know, back to 97 or 90s night to go along with it. Something like that might be interesting to look at.
John, I was so hoping you were going to bust out Cooperalls Night. I mean, why has
no? That would be unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, let's just go right now. We're gonna somebody call up the Canes marketing. Call up Mike Foreman. We demand Cooperalls Night. John, another question. I think
I think the slacks would look well with Waddell's turtleneck.
Yes, or maybe
now, the mock turtleneck night would be nice. You know, Don would go along with it. You know, I have to get Donnie's approval, which he's pretty good at approving a lot of things. So yeah, that would be interesting.
John, you've had a chance to work in this market for quite some time and got to know a lot of the people. And there was an announcement made recently that kind of a Raleigh sports fixture and a legend is retiring and potentially moving on to doing some different things. Jeff Gravely from WRAL Sports is retiring. And I'd like to just get your feel on not only maybe a lot of the guys locally who are kind of moving on in their careers, but what has been the impact of maybe the last year and how the Carolina Hurricanes have grown on local media as a whole?
Local media here, there's such a great group of people. And, you know, in every market, you're going to have good people. And in every market, you're going to have people, especially in media jobs. They're trying to make a name for themselves. And somehow the way you make a name for yourself is to be the most outlandish, and show the least amount of class you can, and just, you know, try to get to the cynical side of what we do, and that's how you're going to make your name. And in this market, we don't have it. It's refreshing. At times, it can be frustrating because at times I think they can be too nice. But I really believe that there's a lot of pride here, and I think it extends through every single member of the media. And when the Hurricanes, you know, get to the postseason, you know, we're lucky because there isn't a Major League Baseball team here. There's plenty of interest in the NFL, but we don't have a team in Raleigh. So they don't have to go to workouts. They don't have to go, you know, every day and cover some of the off-season news that they have to if the football team was actually in Raleigh. So you don't have that. And you got the Durham Bulls, and you got pretty much a sleepy college cycle at that time of the year. So the entire focus is on the Hurricanes. And it is unbelievable the job they do covering every single aspect of a playoff run, from what happens on the ice to what's going on in the stands and around the area. And I think Jeff Gravely, one of the nicest, most professional people I've ever encountered in my career. And he is a dying breed, I really believe, because he is an anchor in a medium that's losing track of itself in terms of local news. Sports divisions of local news, as you know, their time is getting diminished. As time moves on, it seems like they're getting less and less to work with. And Jeff Gravely put more into his, and Mark Armstrong does an outstanding job too, but I think Jeff is a leader in terms of what he was able to do for the community and for every single entity that competes in this market, and do it with class, do it responsibly, and do it with his head high, so that, you know, when you report something bad, when you report something controversial, you know, he can walk into that room the next day with his head high, knowing that he did it the right way. He did it responsibly. And he's just an unbelievable guy. And I wish him nothing but the best. And we're lucky to have people like this in our market, including the Chip Alexanders, Luke DeCock, you know, all these people, Adam Gold and Joe Ovius, they're great people. And they care. And they want everybody to succeed. But they also have a job to do. And I love that, because I told you guys that's my own approach. As much as I can be, you know, from a team standpoint, it's hard to do in my job. It's very easy to be an unabashed homer at what I do. I try to be that, of course, because I love the Canes. I want them to be successful. I love the market. But I want to be objective, too, and tell the truth. When something's not right, I'll give you my opinion. And I think a lot of them do a great job of that here. And Digger, as he's known to his friends, Jeff Gravely, the outstanding job in that regard.
I'll be sure to get him a matching tie and highlighter with that nickname. So you've had the pleasure of working with a lot of people over the years. You've mentioned Daryl Ray. It's no secret that you guys are friends, and you know, you get to work with guys like Tripp and Maniscalco, who are great guys. Who would your dream partner be to call a hockey game with, not named Tripp or Mike, because those answers are too easy.
Right.
And it could be somebody, you know, you could say Razor, because that would be a great combination for us to hear again. But who would you pick that you would love to call a game with?
Well, Razor's one of my best friends, and we've been friends since he was a goalie for the Springfield Indians back in the 1990-91 season. We hit it off and became friends, and we started our career at the same time and worked together for 1 year, and families know each other, so he's near and dear to my heart. It's a great question. It's really hard to answer, because I'm lucky enough I get to work with everybody, right? So I've worked with all of them. And, you know, Eddie Olczyk, and even though, you know, Pierre Maguire can be a polarizing figure, obviously, he's a great friend of mine, and I respect highly, you know, what he brings to the table, and wealth and knowledge and all this stuff. And but Bill Clement, and all, you know, you go back to the ESPN days, I've worked with him. You know, there's a lot of analysts that I've worked with, so it's hard to answer that question. I think maybe if to pick a guy out, I'd love to do three periods with Don Cherry. You know, I'm not sure he's ever actually called a game. Okay. He does what he does and has done it unbelievably well, but I'd like to do something like that and pick his brain as you go along. It would be great to do a game with Bobby Orr. or Wayne Gretzky, one game, just to hear them commentate on a game that wasn't, you know, of high importance, just a normal game. It could be Florida, New Jersey. It could be Carolina, Dallas, whatever. Just to hear them dissect the game and then get back to the fan that's in me, you know, Bobby Orr would be the ultimate. So maybe that's the answer, long-winded as usual, but maybe that's the answer to the question. It'd be somebody like a Bobby Orr, who's been great to me over the years. And but to get him in the booth, that'd be something entirely different.
John, I'm not going to lie. The thought of you and Robert, a.k.a. Bobby Orr, in the booth might be making me a little weepy. The media guy in me absolutely loves that. So this is actually the last question for me, and this come from one of our good friends, Oliver. Most folks know him as Canalytics. You may have heard over the summer as Mike and Tripp were calling some of the playoff games on the radio. At the end of a game where there was a bountiful goal scored, none other than Tripp Tracy looked at Mike Maniscalco and yelled, "Consume me!" I would love to get your reaction to maybe the greatest radio call in the, or at least one of the top five radio calls in Carolina Hurricanes history, with Tripp and "Consume me."
Yeah, so the news gets to me pretty quickly, right, in today's world because of social media. So when these things happen, you know, it's almost instantaneous. So on the media bus, I have the very last seat. You know, I sit back near the, for a better word, the John. Okay. So I sit in the back in the last seat of the bus, always have. But when I heard about this, and they sit near the back too, I got on the bus and, let's just say I looked for another seat. I wasn't sure, you know, what this, consume me was all about. And I want to make sure they were both okay before I got back there and got anywhere near the two of them. But a great moment. Tripp again pulls it out of his hat. Entirely natural, as was Tripp going out in the crowd. And what did he do? Go up the forklift or something when they had the countdown of wins, the decals on the side of the building, and. He didn't put on the Braveheart disguise or the red jacket, but he came close. And you're right, consume me. I'm not sure I'm ever saying that. I'm going to leave that to the two of them. But that was a great moment. And those two guys did a great job. You know, when they, you know, we didn't know how this was going to work in the second round, what series I was going to get. And luckily, NBC put me on the Kane series. Which I was so happy for, and then Mike got an opportunity to call the games with Tripp. They did a great job.
Well, John, we can say that we as Carolina Hurricanes fans are probably the most lucky, not because of what Derek was about to correct my grammar.
Luckiest
is probably more appropriate. John could probably tell me that as well. Some of the luckiest fans in the league to have the media coverage that we do have from a team aspect. And again, you have been so gracious with your time to take nearly an hour to talk to us and the Caniac Nation. So on behalf of us who still question why you talk to a couple of yahoos sitting in their mother's basement doing a podcast, we can't say thank you enough for taking some time out of your summer vacation to talk with us, and we can't wait for October 4th to roll around so that way we can listen to you call another great Carolina Hurricane season here in Raleigh. Hopefully not just a one-year contract, but a forever contract, because John, you are near and dear to all of our hearts, and you are every bit as much of Carolina Hurricanes hockey as Rod Brindamore is. So we can't say thank you enough, sir. And we hope the rest of your summer goes very well. Actually, I lied. Last question. How's the Suns goaltending career going? Anything you want to say about his podcast or kind of how he's doing? Because I know he had a pretty good season last year.
Yeah, he had a great year in his freshman year. And so it's a big jump. And he ended up finishing the year as their number one goalie. They had to win their last game of the season to get in, and actually the last two. So he spelled the junior on the Friday night, went in, won that game, and then they gave it to him in the last game of the season. And he had a win, or they were done. They won that game. He was first star. He lost the first round of playoffs, but he led the team in saves, made the Dean's List, got in the All-Academic for his conference, and going for his second year. So he had a great year. They had to table the podcast. Their lives are too demanding. So in Matthew's case, he had too much going on this summer with his job, his training. And in Ford's case, he had an internship with ABC News in New York City. He goes to school at Syracuse. He's probably going to be way better than Ron Burgundy someday. But you'll see him on the news somewhere. But he's going to be a bright light in the media business someday. So anyway, they kind of put that on hiatus. But thanks for asking. He's looking forward to going back. And everything else you said, I really appreciate. Humbled by it. And Mike and Derek, I'll tell you what, your dedication, your passion for this team, keeping this podcast where it's been over the years, for the fans, by the fans, that's why I want to do it every year. And I do hope that we extend this one-year thing and we continue to move forward with the Canes for many years to come.
Absolutely. John, we will see you next fall here on the podcast. Between now and then, we look forward to hearing you calling games, not only in March and April, but in May and June. John, thank you so much.
None better.
There you go. None better. Go Sox. Right, we'll talk to you soon, John.
Thanks, John.
Talk to you.
None better than John Forslund.
Nope. Can't think of anyone.
No.
I was trying.
So again, big thank you to John Forslund for taking so much time out of his summer vacation to chat with us. And Derek, we've got a couple of weeks until Carolina Hurricanes training camp starts in full. A couple of highlights to hit on. We're working on this season's sponsorships. Those could affect not only this year's tailgates, but potentially more than one live show this upcoming season. So we're working on some of that for you. Also, rumor has it that the much-anticipated, much-teased Cheaters Never Canes cast is in works and is going to be happening soon. So we look forward to being in the studio with both Mike Smith and Mike Maniscalco in the very near future. I mean, just a fun season ahead, Derek.
Absolutely. In sooner coming hockey news, the Canes put out a tweet tonight that they will be revealing the white jerseys, uniforms, if you will, on August 20th. So that is...
They're sweaters, Derek.
Well, it'll be a whole uniform, I assume. Unless they're just going to wear like really long sweaters like they're hanging out in the dorms.
Cooperalls?
Maybe they're shirt cocking it. Who knows? Maybe that'll be the Canes' new thing next year. So we'll see those on August 20th. Tweet us with your speculation of what is going to be contained in these uniforms. Will there be Cooperalls? Who knows? That'll be fun. Will Justin Williams be in the video? That can be even more fun. Will he sign here? Who knows? But there's some fun stuff coming up for the Canes. Actually, we hope it's going to be fun and not just people being mad online.
Yeah. Also, speaking of fun, yours truly is a part of hashtag Team Dad Bod. There was no Canes 24-hour cycling challenge this year due to numerous issues with the facility that they had it at, moving and all sorts of things. So I, along with a few other members of the former Section 328 cycling team, have joined Team Dad Bod as part of the Canes 5K charity run that's coming up in early September. So be on the lookout. I'm probably going to start pimping out, wanting to get deep inside your wallets to raise a little bit of money for the kids and the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation. So thank you in advance for everybody who takes advantage of being able to give a little bit to make other people's lives just a little bit better. Again, lots of things coming up. We're going to figure out some more charity things to do this summer and this fall. We're going to figure out how to do some really good tailgates this fall with some really great sponsors. But most importantly, we're back. We're back in the studio. We're back doing the podcast. I am back with one of my best friends of 7 years behind the mics, and I can't tell you just how excited I am to be with this guy.
Aww.
That I hate so much.
Aww, there's the honesty I'm here for, Mike. Thank you.
Until next week, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
And we're still out of here.
Pyah!